This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. In the lead up to the May 6th primary election, we're talking to congressional candidates from North Carolina's 2nd District. They include Frank Roach, Clay Aiken, Keith Crisco, Toni Morris, and incumbent Renee Elmers. Congresswoman Elmers has declined to come on the program. Today, we're talking to Democratic candidate Toni Morris. This is Toni's second time running in the 2nd District. She ran in 2012 in the Democratic primary but lost to Steve Wilkins. Toni's a licensed professional counselor who works with children and adults in the Fayetteville area. Toni Morris, welcome to the state. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Good to have you. You ran in 2012. You lost in the primary. What encouraged you to run again?
People in the district. The first time I ran, you know, as an unknown, first time running, and people got to know me in the district. When we came around this time, they, you know, approached me and said, Toni, we need you to run again. We want you to run again. So I thought about it, gave it some consideration, and because they kept asking, I said yes.
You did pretty well. You got somewhere around 40% of the vote in
the primary, right? I did.
So you have two opponents in the race in the Democratic side, Keith Crisco and Clay Aiken. What sets you apart?
What sets me apart is my job that I do every day as a licensed professional counselor is focused on people. My background in healthcare is focused on people. My volunteer work in our community is focused on people. And in my opinion, I think we need to have more people in Washington who are focused on people, not special interest groups, not businesses, but people, because that's what we're in the business of running the country to benefit people.
Well, that sounds a little bit like what Clay Aiken says. He's explicit. He runs on a platform of not being a politician. Mm-hmm. He was on this show, and I challenged him on this. I said, you're going to Washington. You're not talking just to people. They're professionals, and their profession is politics. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know how to play their game, you're not going to do very well.
Oh, yeah. And for me, I deal with politics all the time because, again, I am part of the Democratic State Executive Committee for the state of North Carolina. I am a part of Democratic Women of Cumberland County, which is a part of Democratic Women for North Carolina. I've worked on senatorial campaigns. I've worked on mayoral campaigns. I've worked on city council campaigns. So I'm very familiar with the politics, and I work with all our politicians, with our state legislator. I'm also part of the Licensed Professional Counsel Association for the state of North Carolina. And this past year, I had to go and organize an advocacy day to go speak with our state legislators on mental health. I went to down to Raleigh. We talked to all of our legislators about mental health. And in addition to that, I had to look at the bills. We have an attorney that is down at the legislature. When bills came through that was specifically focused on mental health, they were emailed to me. I went through, lined out things that I knew was not working for mental health, emailed it back to our attorney. She presented it to the General Assembly. So I've been doing that work already.
All right. What doesn't work for mental health in North Carolina?
Right now, what's not working is that, well, Department of Health, Human Health and Services are not really as organized as they should be. That's the first thing. We are losing providers left and right, from psychiatrists, psychologists, to therapists. They are leaving the state. Why? Because reimbursement rates are very low for the state of North Carolina in comparison to South Carolina, Georgia, Virginia. And a lot of people are leaving to go to those areas. The amount of paperwork they want us to do in mental health is also over the top in comparison to other states. So a lot of providers, the amount of work they're putting in and the fact that reimbursements rates are really low, it's causing problems. So they're leaving. And we've got to work on that.
Well, how much of that can you work on from Washington?
From Washington, I can work on a lot of that because, again, we got to remember we got the federal level of health and human services, which then will dictate down to the state level. So being up in Washington, I am talking to the people up in Washington who can make decisions that will trickle down to the state level and make sure they understand it from a person who works in it, not from a report, not from, you know, some surveys that were done. I actually work in the field.
This legislature and governor has demonstrated or have demonstrated a willingness to ignore and in fact, turn back benefits, turn back hundreds of millions of dollars rather than be dictated to by Washington. Benefits are being cut. What do you do about that?
Well, again, that's going to, from the state level, you're going to have to look at who our governor is and see if he's working for us. Again, working with our governor is going to be important. At this time, it appears that our governor is not willing to work with anybody in Washington, which is not in the best interest for the state of North Carolina. Because when we look at Medicaid, we have hundreds of thousands of people on Medicaid in North Carolina. What are we going to do? And from a mental health perspective, we need mental health services. And as you continue to push back against Washington, you're going to be pushing people out of the field, as I stated earlier, which is not beneficial to North Carolina.
We're starting to hear more and more that our prisons are becoming de facto mental health institutions mm-hmm. because we're not providing proper care. Mm-hmm. And then eventually people run afoul of the law and they end up in a prison that is not well suited. How do you if that's true, and first, what do you think about that as a proposition? And if it's true, what do you do about it?
I believe it is true only because our legal system and our judicial system do not understand mental health from the perspective of a mental health provider. So a lot of times our men and women who have mental health issues end up behind bars in jails. And again, then the jails are not equipped for mental health services. They're housing our men and women who are, you know, been convicted, and that's all they do with them. There is really not a lot of rehabilitation. There's not a lot of services provided to them. So if you take an individual who has mental health problems, you put them in jail with no services. They do their time. They get out. What has changed?
How do you see things being organized? You talked about two things. First of all, providing, you know, better reimbursement mm-hmm. for providers, mm-hmm. Less paperwork. Mm-hmm. How about in terms of organization? Are people being lost? Is there a way, or would that all be taken care of because we'd have more practitioners in the state? We wouldn't be losing so many people.
It would probably be taken care of more because we have more practitioners and tracking them more. Right now with mental health, like, for example, I do outpatient therapy. I cannot make people come to therapy, but I can track them. So if I haven't seen them in a while, I could put a phone call. Haven't seen you in a while. Are you doing okay? Do you need something? You know, a lot of times if I make those phone calls, they say, yes, ma'am. A lot of times it's finances. I just couldn't pay the copay, even though with Medicaid it's only $3. But if you're on Medicaid, $3 is a lot. So I couldn't pay the copay, or I didn't have transportation to get there. Those are issues that mental health people with mental health illness fight every day. So, again, that becomes a big problem for me. In my practice, tracking them is very, very important for me. We have to do that. As a state level, I don't think we do a good job as tracking people as we should. And I don't think that the paper trail that should follow is being followed as it should. So I think we have problems and we lose people in the cracks because of that.
How do you feel about the Affordable Care Act?
The Affordable Care Act, right now, I am supportive of it. It just rolled out and I would like to see how it works. I would like to see what's working, what's not working. The things that are not working, I would like for us to reevaluate, see what could be done better. How can we make it work? Because right now we do have people who need health care insurance. I hear a lot of times, and I have heard people say, well, they can go to the emergency room. The honest truth is, emergency room is not your primary care provider. It's there for emergencies. Having health insurance, which would allow you to have a primary care provider, is the best way, one, for preventive medication. Because think about it. If you have a primary care provider who is tracking your illness and tracking your symptoms, he can catch things a lot quicker. Without a primary care provider, you're going to treat it yourself. You're going to go to the store, buy over-the-counter medicine to treat the symptoms. But if it's not working, the symptoms are going to get worse, which then leads you to the emergency room, which then may lead to hospitalization. And if you compare the cost of the two, an emergency room visit is much more expensive than going to your primary care provider. So health care insurance is definitely needed.
And that cost does get passed on. They
yes.
can't just absorb that cost.
Correct.
So it ends up in all of our health care bill.
Correct.
And in the meantime, somebody who may have had preventive care had they had a primary and maybe not lost time has mm-hmm. waited until they go to the emergency right. room, and now they're not showing up at their job. So that's a productivity issue. And
Correct.
Again, that ends up being a cost that you don't see on your tax bill, but it certainly is something we actually physically pay.
Yes.
So you grew up in a military family. Your
Correct.
Husband is also retired Air Force, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you're in a military district largely.
Yes.
What do you think are the most important issues facing military members and their families in North Carolina?
Well, right now, the biggest issue is making sure we have enough, again, our mental health services to provide for our men and women who have come back from Afghanistan and Iraq. We've got men and women who've done 5-6 tours in that area of the country. You have to think of it from the perspective of, you take an 18-year-old who spent all his days playing football and running with his friends, and then he goes into the military. Well, then he goes through basic training, and they send him over to Afghanistan. When he goes over there, he has to learn completely things completely differently. He has to learn a rock may not be a rock. He has to learn that he or she has to learn that a child standing before you may not be just a child. It could be a person with a bomb. A woman may not just be a woman. That's completely shifting our thought processes that we have instilled in our people here. So when you send them over there and you have to retrain them to think that way, it becomes a part of them. And then you bring them back home and expect, oh, well, I'm back in the United States. I should be able to let it go. It doesn't happen. So a big concern in our community in the middle is making sure we have enough services to provide the care the men and women will need when they come back home. And then reunification of families. We have lose a lot of families with our military deployments. Divorce is very high with military deployments. It's stressful for the families. It's stressful for the military. And again, as a country, we've got to do a better job of taking care of our military men and women.
Do we know how to do that? And if we do, why aren't we doing it? What would need to be done?
We know how to do it. We're just not doing it. Again, it's about investment. Do we want to invest the time and energy into making sure our military men and women are cared for? It takes a lot to do that. And when you're focused on, again, we have to be because, again, we've got, as you're hearing with Al-Qaeda and the terrorists, you've got Russia, you've got Syria. We've got so many things going on across the country, and our military are the first line of defense for us for the most part. So, you know, people in Washington are going to say, well, we got our military. We could send them in. We could, you know, you always hear, let's send in our forces to Ukraine. Let's send in our forces to Syria. Realistically, can we do that? Can we keep putting men and women in these positions without thinking it'll have an impact? We have the ability to do better. We just got to do better.
Well, you've raised an important resource question. How thin can we spread our military to get to these hotspots around the world? But on the financial side, you've come up with a number of ways we can spend more money. There's concern mm-hmm. about the federal debt. What do we mm-hmm. do about that?
Yeah. And again, that's something we have to look at because with respect to military, and you're looking at our debt, if you want to decrease the debt with military, we can't always go and engage in all these conflicts. We have to use other options. We have to use some diplomacy, you know, some other options other than military first. That's a very costly thing to do, is to send our military in. We've spent millions of dollars in Iraq and Afghanistan because of it. So again, when we're looking at the debt, we've got to look at what areas can we cut back on. Right now, defense is not the biggest area we can cut back on, only because we do have so many conflicts that are going around, so many threats that are still there. But we need to do better with how we spend our money with defense budgets.
Is it all a matter of cuts? You know, business is doing much, much better. Wall Street is rocking and people are going back to work. Can we now talk about tax increases? Can we now increase our revenue to pay for the things that we need?
We can. I think first we need to do a better job with our getting jobs. Because although we have business doing well, we still have a lot of people that are still out of work. I believe I heard on the news yesterday that, you know, North Carolina, even though we're sitting at 6.6 or 6.7 unemployment rate, we still got over 300,000 people here in the state that are unemployed. You say, when you look at it from that perspective, we've got to do a better job of getting people back to work. When we get people back to work, that will improve our economy. When we improve our economy, it makes it easier to increase taxes as well as cuts because people are working.
You worked in education. You were a teacher, right? And
correct.
A school counselor as well?
Correct.
What about education topics? How do you see the landscape here in North Carolina? We hear about the exodus of teachers, a fast exodus, mm-hmm. particularly mm-hmm. in Wake County, but all over the state. What's going on here and what needs to be done?
I think that we need to do a better job of supporting our teachers and providing them with the resources they need to be effective. We're not doing that right now. Teachers are extremely stressed. They have, you know, the course of study they have to teach. They have a limited time to teach it. They have to prepare for end of grade testing. They have to prepare for benchmark testing. And then on top of that, they have to deal with behaviors in classroom. A lot of our teachers are not trained to handle behaviors, which can be problematic. And it could cause, you know, gaps in education and learning process. We've got to do a better job of making sure our teachers are equipped with the skills that they need to be effective in a classroom. And right now, our state is not doing that. With the current cuts, we are going to lose teachers again. Virginia is going to pay more. D.C. is going to pay more. Georgia is going to pay more. So guess where our teachers are going to go? So where does that leave our education system here in North Carolina? I graduated from a high school in Fayetteville. And I had the best teachers. I can look back on that now, and I know for a fact I had the best teachers. And I remember how they taught. When I was a teacher, I saw the difference. And we've got to get back to letting teachers teach. You can't teach to a test, because the world in which we live in is not all about testing. It's about critical thinking. And we've got to do a better job of that.
What about immigration reform? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, when we look at immigration reform, a topic that always comes up is that we need to have a pathway to citizenship. But at the same time, we have a policy in place that I don't think is being adhered to. When we look at people who want to come to our country just to work, they don't want to be citizens. They just want to work. And we have a policy in place to get them work visas. The problem that I'm hearing is taking forever for work visas to come through. So if I decide I'm going to come to the United States And they said, well, yeah, we're going to apply for a work visa and it's going to take 6 months to do it. You know, then what happens? People, the employers need people working. The employees need to work. So then we get the problem of, you know, stuff happening that shouldn't happen. You know, I'm going to pay you under the table because, you know, I need workers and we can't wait for the paperwork to go through. That's what we're having a problem with when it comes to immigration.
I'm talking to Toni Morris. She is a Democratic candidate in the primary for 2nd District, 2nd Congressional District in North Carolina, and you're listening to The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachel. Let me ask you this. So we talked about you think an accelerated visa program would help us, an expedited program, but what about pathway to citizenship? Would you approve? Do you think that's a good idea?
I think it's a good idea. I think if you want to be a citizen of the United States, you know, if we, and again, timelines is what we're going to look at. If you come to the United States, we get, okay, you're here for a year. You have your visa. At the end of the year, you need to decide whether you want to be a citizen or if you want to go back to your country. If you say, I want to become a citizen, we put you on that pathway to become a citizen. And again, it helps with us documenting who's here and who's not here. It also allows people the freedom to know they breathe and don't have to be in hiding. Because if I'm on a pathway to citizenship, I don't have to worry about hiding or not talking to people. I can be free and I can be open. And I think that would be beneficial to the United States.
Argument is they broke the law. Why would you give any incentive or any break to somebody who broke one of our laws?
Well, again, you have to look at it from the perspective, are we in the business of just putting people in jail or are we going to give people opportunity to do better? And if we're going to give them an opportunity to do better, we put them on that pathway to give them the opportunity to see this is what you can do the legal way, to encourage them to do more of the legal way instead of doing it the illegal way.
You are in a fairly Republican district. Renee Elmer is the incumbent right now. What would happen should you win the primary? How would you expect to win the general election?
Well, right now, the general election would be me reaching out to the Republicans as well. Because, again, I'm not going to represent just Democrats when I go to Washington. I'm supposed to represent the whole district, which means Democrats and Republicans, which means I have to be able to go out and talk to them, let them know who I am and see where we have common ground. Because for the most part, we're people in general. We put labels of Republican and Democrat on us, which separates us. But when we come to the basic, we are people and we have common ground. We have things we have in common, and finding that common ground will be important for me. And again, I think I could do that within this district. That I have friends who are Republican, and they have told me I would vote for you, Toni, because you're a good person.
These days, common ground is pretty expensive real estate and awfully hard to find. Mm-hmm. Polarization in Washington is one of the chief topics when you talk about politics today. Is that reasonable? And how would you address that? How would you actually manage to bring people together across this growing divide?
Reminding them who we are. We are the United States of America. And I think that's something we have forgotten. You know, when I think back to 9/11, we came together quickly with no problem. We didn't care about what party you belong to. We didn't care about what religion you belong to. We didn't care about sexual orientation. We didn't care about any of that because we were the United States of America. And the goal would need to be to get back to that place where we all are focused on what we need to do as a country. That's what we got. We've allowed so much negativity to infiltrate us as people, and we need to now let go of that and get back to focusing on who we are as the United States of America. We do not need another terrorist attack or anything to bring us back together. We got to start now, and we need to show the world that we are the United States of America. We may have our flaws, but we always come together. That's where we need to come back, and that's what we need to be doing.
Toni Morris, great pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you
so much. Toni Morris, licensed professional counselor who works with children and adults in Fayetteville and is a Democrat running in the primary for our 2nd Congressional District. She's running against Keith Crisco and Clay Aiken in the Democratic primary. And you can find all of our conversations with 2nd District candidates on our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the orchestral music produced by Kids. Kids Notes coming up. Stay tuned.